Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. Happy birthday to the United States of America. As always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a group of people who firmly believe that we are the nation. I'm your hostess for this evening for Patriot Education, and in celebration of the birth of our nation, I believe that it is time to proclaim liberty throughout the land, as is inscribed on the Liberty Bell, which was rung at the signing of the document that began this great country of ours. And in honor of our nation's birth, I will read aloud, as Johnny Cash mentioned, the birth certificate of the United States of America. The Declaration of Independence, in Congress, July 4th, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining, in the meantime, exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice, by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us, in many cases, of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitions for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation, and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the birth certificate of the United States of America. In it, the founding fathers expressed to the world the reasons for the American Revolution and the birth of this great nation. They had tried over a period of years, more than 20, in fact, to get Great Britain and its king and its parliament to recognize them as viable British citizens, as they were promised by the initial charters given to each of the colonies. Every single one of the 13 colonies was settled by people who were told that they were British citizens and inheritors of the rights thereto, and that their emigration to this new and wild and strange place would not deprive them of their rights as citizens of Great Britain and wards of the king. And yet, And yet, Britain abandoned their promise. The Declaration is, as Jefferson and Adams put it, a magnificent statement or declaration of the American mind. It embodies the belief that government derives its powers from the consent of the governed. It states boldly and blankly that the right to life and freedom and the choice to pursue happiness in your own way comes from God and not government. It states that those who sign it are well aware that they are in danger of great peril, including death. And they promised, every single one of the men who signed that document, that they would pledge to one another their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. They were willing to die, ladies and gentlemen, to achieve the freedom they believed that nature and nature's God entitled them to. We have, right now, in this nation, the chance to redeclare our independence and to truly proclaim liberty throughout the land. Because if we really look at that birth certificate, and we look at the various charges leveled against King George III, if we place those restrictions and usurpations in modern terms, we can see a similar pattern of restriction and usurpation coming toward us from Washington, D.C. There are several points in the Declaration of Independence that are uncannily mirrored in our current political situation. We have similar problems now to the problems that the men of 1776 faced. The only difference is that we are no longer at war with an absentee landlord. We are facing the behaviors of those that we trusted and gave power to make our laws and execute them on our behalf. We need to be aware that the colonial patriots did not immediately grab a pitchfork and desire to shoot the king after the first time he said, "No, you can't do that." As a matter of fact, in the Declaration itself, they say, "In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury." That kind of reminds me, or makes me think of, the various gatherings in Washington and in state capitals of people like the Tea Party, the various Tea Party organizations, the Patriot organizations, Freedom Works, Americans for Prosperity, the Heritage Foundation, Glenn Beck and his Restoring Honor and Restoring Courage and Restoring Love. We have petitioned for redress of grievances, most humbly, most sincerely, and with no threat of violence and no disturbing or destroying of any property, anybody. All of these gatherings have left the public places in which they were held cleaner, neater, and more pristine than they found them. And again, every petition for redress has been answered with repeated injury. More and more political game playing used to try to silence the people of this nation from whom that government engaging in these games derives their just power. The best way I know to celebrate the birthday of this land is for us to read our birth certificate and truly understand what impelled those very brave men to go to war against the greatest power, military power, in the known world at the time. a little tiny population of 2 million people spread over 13 colonies that took up barely one-fifth of the space of this part of the continent, stood up and defied a nation which ruled the seas and whose armies had conquered just about anything they set their mind to, whose empire spread from India all the way around the world to the American colonies, whose king had the power of what was considered to be divine right to rule over them. Yet they stood up and they spoke out and they dared death and destruction for themselves, their families, their friends, and their property for what they believed to be right. That kind of courage, ladies and gentlemen, that kind of belief in what is right hasn't died since 1776. It's still here. It is inherent in American culture and in the American people. It is no shame to be an American, in spite of what our president says when he visits foreign countries. It is a source of pride, not only because of our roots and our founders and our documents and our beliefs, but because we have here something that no land or society in the history of mankind has ever been able to accomplish. We have created a system of government and a society in which the opportunity for individual liberty has not been eliminated to preserve the safety of society. We have achieved something amazing, ladies and gentlemen, thanks to those brave men and all of the rest of the Americans who have fought in our wars and held public office and tried to steer this huge ship of state in the right direction over the past 230 years. The belief that individual liberty, that pursuit of happiness, is a God-given right, is fundamental to everything our nation stands for. It is what we base our actions and our commerce and our lawmaking and our spiritual lives on. One of the reasons that many Americans have so much difficulty understanding groups like the Muslim Brotherhood is because it is almost impossible for us to conceive the strictures of living under a theocracy that declares those who do not follow a specific religion as deserving only one of two fates, conversion or death. This is outside the pattern of the way Americans think. It is outside the pattern of anyone in this nation's thinking who has either taken the oath of citizenship or who was born and brought up here. We have something unique, ladies and gentlemen. And the Declaration of Independence is the founding document that first lays it out. These men who put this together, Jefferson, Adams, Franklin, and all the rest of the men who signed it, and don't worry, I'm going to salute each and every one of them before this program is over. I'll read out everybody's name. These men were heroes because they did not let very real fear of losing everything stop them from doing what was right. This is what makes a hero, ladies and gentlemen. Heroes are not those who lack fear. Heroes are those who do what is right instead of what is easy. And God knows that these men did not do what was easy. Many of them died. Many of them had everything they owned taken from them or destroyed. Many of them lost family members. Many were imprisoned. Many were terrified for the vast majority of their days during the Revolutionary War. They were not perfect. They were not demigods. They were not heroes in the classical godlike stance of old Beowulf or the mighty god Thor or Siegfried or the great conquerors of dragons like St. George. They were men, human beings with their own personalities and their own beliefs and their own arguments and discussions and quarrels and irreconcilable differences. And they had many of them. But they were men who shared one strong belief, that it is the right of human beings to govern themselves, and that no artificial barrier should be put in the place of a man or a woman's ability to succeed using their talents, their skills, their minds, and their hearts. They lived in a very structured society in many ways. Rank and privilege mattered, particularly back home in England. The idea of hereditary titles was very familiar to them because their roots were in a society that believed that you inherited your position in life and you were stuck with it throughout your life. Unless you did become some sort of amazing hero, and then somebody who had more rank than you could bestow upon you a rank that gave you a higher privilege than your fellow citizens. Many of them came from landed families, but they were younger sons. And because Great Britain and its patrilineal inheritance laws made it impossible for anyone but the eldest son of a landowner or a peer to inherit title and lands, they had no opportunities other than entering the church or the military. But in America, they could actually own land, and owning land, ladies and gentlemen, property, meant you had power. You had the right to vote. You had the right to elect members to Parliament in the House of Commons, in the case of those who weren't born into the peerage. You could pass on your possessions to your son. You were not homeless if somebody inherited the property on which you were a tenant farmer and they decided they wanted to erase your village and put in a park. And that is what happened on many large estates, not only in Great Britain, but all over Europe. In this land of ours, people couldn't do that, because land was owned by the individual, and you could decide to whom you would leave it. And nobody else could take it away from you unless he bought it from you or attempted by violence to steal it. Something that modern Americans don't really understand as deeply as our founders did, why property was so important to them. We think of ourselves as, property is nice. I mean, it's nice to own things. We'd rather own them than, you know, just borrow them and have somebody say, no, I need that back and you can't have it anymore. And we'd rather own our house and rent it because then we can make a profit when we sell it or decide to rent it out to somebody else when we move somewhere. But these are things that we accept as the norm. This is what everybody does. Well, that was not the case for the vast majority of the colonists who came here. Land meant rank. Land meant political power. Land meant that you were to be reckoned with. Your ideas, your concerns, your opinions, your voice counted. You mattered. We have all grown up under a system that says it's what you carry inside you that matters, and that's what gives you the chance to gain property and influence and power. We have never lived, most of us, in a society where someone, simply by the accident of his birth, could claim ownership of us. None of us alive today in this country have ever been owned by anyone except ourselves. That is totally foreign to us. It was not always the case in these colonies. As a matter of fact, we nearly didn't get to be an independent nation over the issue of ownership of human beings. Had there not been a compromise in both the Declaration of Independence, which required unanimous consent of all 13 colonies, there would not have been a compromise in the United States Constitution, because the South would never have ratified it if slavery was not protected, at least for their lifetime. So we do have some knowledge of what it might be like to be owned. Not real experiential knowledge, most of us, but historical knowledge that that horrid state of affairs did exist in this nation. And it took 100 years to change. But, ladies and gentlemen, it did change. It did change. We are not perfect as a nation, ladies and gentlemen. We have not always done the right thing at the right time. But one thing we have always done as a nation deserves recognition and should engender in all of us a degree of pride. We have always attempted, ladies and gentlemen, as a nation, to be better tomorrow than we were yesterday. It is this fundamental idea that all things can be improved if we put our minds to it and give people with ideas the opportunity to make those ideas reality and gain the recognition, monetary or otherwise, that they deserve for making things better. That ability was denied the men who framed the Declaration of Independence. The royal governors sent to oversee each colony were politically or genetically connected to those in power. They were not chosen because of their expertise. They were chosen as a reward for doing something that the crown appreciated. Some of them were chosen, I think, probably to get them the heck out of the way so they wouldn't bother the crown. They were not held accountable to the people. They were held accountable to the king only. They were not accessible to the people. In the sense that our elected officials are. They were put in place to rule the people. As in ancient Persia, the satraps were put in charge of the various provinces and satrapies of the Persian Empire. Not to guide and protect the rights of the people. Good heavens, no, the people have no rights. But to keep them under control and make sure they did what they were supposed to continue to make the empire nice and fat and comfortable. Another one of our fundamental beliefs that is both overtly and subtly expressed in the Declaration of Independence is that we have, or should have, the opportunity to make our own mistakes and do what we choose with what is ours. The clauses, the parts of the Declaration, for example, this one, where they talk about he has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. That directly related to the fact that the king and the crown were telling the colonists that they could not expand westward. They could not explore. They could not try to go farther than the king told them to. They were not allowed to go beyond the borders determined by the crown. They were not allowed to encourage people to come here. They were not allowed to grow. Because if they did, if they started to grow and had access to even more resources, the crown's ability to hold them and control them and continue to rape their resources for the use of the British Navy, the British Army, and the British Crown would weaken. It would take longer and harder journeys by sea and by land from Canada to restrain the colonists. And more money must be spent to equip the military to put a fence around them so they couldn't expand. Today, our immigration problem is slightly different, but it has its roots in the same cause. Our current government is not interested in bringing in people who wish to become Americans and follow our ethos, our values, our principles, and immerse themselves into our society. Our current political masters are more interested in using people coming to this nation for opportunity as a means of denying opportunity to the rest of us, as a means of taking away our freedoms, taking away our ability to make this nation what it should be by making us as dependent upon the will of government as the British colonists were dependent upon the whims of the king. The immigration situation that the colonists face is similar in many ways to the one we're facing now. One of the biggest draws to this country, one of the reasons why we had massive immigration in the latter part of the 19th and early part of the 20th century, was that people could come here and they could assimilate into this society and be any damn thing their minds and hearts wanted them to be. They were not held back by having been born into one class or another and having been told or promised that they would remain poor, ignorant, and powerless simply because of the accident of their birth. They came here also for that magic thing, property, land, because they were coming from Europe where land meant power. It meant family. It meant rank. It meant privilege. If you didn't have it, you were valueless. Your land wasn't yours. You worked on it for a landlord. You worked on it just as the tenant farmers did in the South and just as the slaves did in the South. They came here not because they wanted free stuff, but because they wanted freedom. We have a situation now where many of the people who come here illegally also want freedom. But unfortunately, many who come here are being seduced by the promise of free stuff and told that it means the same thing as freedom. Another aspect of the usurpations and injuries perpetrated on the colonies by George III and the British Parliament, mentioned in the Declaration, is this section. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. In effect, Homeland Security is very close in its purpose and in what it can do to this same usurpation of civilian authority that angered and terrified the colonists so much. Franklin said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that those who give up their liberty to ensure a temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. When we become so afraid that we plead for prison bars and slave collars to protect us, we might as well just go ahead and slit our throats, because we have created for ourselves World War Z. We have become zombies. We are the living dead. Because, as our founding fathers knew, living is risk. As my friend in the chat room says, lemmings. Follow a leader right over the cliff and into the Arctic Ocean simply because everybody else is doing the same thing. And we feel safe in the herd. Nothing bad can happen to us if we're doing what we're told. This pernicious idea is what the founding fathers had to face. Because believe me, ladies and gentlemen, if you look at documents and diaries and journals and newspaper articles from the colonial times, not everybody was hot for the patriot cause. A lot of people didn't want either the Tories or the Patriots. They just wanted to be left alone to raise their kids and farm their land or run their store or operate their business. And they didn't really care who was in charge of government so long as they could do those things. But when George III and his troops started making it impossible for people to do those things, there got to be a heck of a lot more patriots than there were before. Because like anybody else in the history of human beings, It's easy enough to shrug your shoulders and turn your head when you're not personally affected by the dictates of a government that is damaging others. But when it walks in your back door, or slides into your email, or listens to your phone calls, all of a sudden, the red lights go off, the alarm bells ring, and you say, wait a minute, you're not allowed to do that. Well, it's okay for you to do it to people who want to blow up the World Trade Center. You can do the, but me? I'm just a little old lady sitting in my living room. You know? Poor widow lady. Yeah? I'm absolutely no threat to anybody. Why on earth would anybody be interested in my emails or my telephone calls? I have no influence. I'm not politically important. I'm not wealthy. I'm not powerful. But we forget. We forget, ladies and gentlemen, that wealth and power can only push you so far. Sooner or later, that indomitable human spirit that knows deep down that its rights to life, liberty, and happiness come from its creator and not government, eventually rebels, just as those men in 1776 did. There is only so long that people, that human beings, thinking human beings, will tolerate tyranny. The colonists had had enough. They had done everything they could within the framework of the laws imposed upon them by Great Britain to try to get the king and the parliament to recognize their right to at least some degree of self-governance, as they were promised when their parents and grandparents emigrated here. Every one of the colonies was begun with the promise that the colonists were British citizens under British common law. Not only were they to obey the law of Great Britain, they were to be able to take advantage of the rights given to them or protected for them under that law, such as trial by a jury of one's peers, such as having representation in Parliament that could vote on taxation, such as being able to choose their own representatives, such as being able to say, no, I don't want 60 soldiers living on my farm, killing my pigs for their dinner, slaughtering my chickens, and casting voracious eyes on my daughters. If you truly look at our birth certificate, ladies and gentlemen, and the litany of grievances that the Founding Fathers expressed to explain why they took the great step of revolution and declared their independence and the severance of all bonds with their mother country. If you look at the things they accused King George of, and then you look at the United States Constitution, okay, which is our second, chronologically, important founding document, you will see that every single one of its parts and its amendments set up restrictions so that our government could not do to us what Great Britain had done to them. Not only did they wish to be independent of the king and parliament, they wished their progeny, their great, 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 down through the unforeseeable future, children, to have what they had had to fight for. Those men were heroes, ladies and gentlemen, not because they were perfect, not because they were all Mother Teresa, not because they were somehow or other anointed by God to be his prophets, but because they put everything on the line for a future that looked like a very distant star in a time of bloody conflict and terror. They believed in the possibility of a better tomorrow than yesterday. Not because somebody would give it to them, but because they were willing to fight and die to get there. My show is called Patriot Education for two reasons, ladies and gentlemen. One of them is what I do for a living and my area of expertise. I have been involved in education as a private tutor, as a substitute teacher, and as a paraprofessional aide for more than 40 years. I have watched the progressive takeover of our public schools. I have watched our children being told that if somebody owes them something, and that if something is hard, they shouldn't have to do it. And that a grade only means the teacher likes you or dislikes you. And that learning is supposed to be fun, and if it isn't fun, then you don't have to learn it. I have watched the deterioration of standards. I have watched the handcuffing and gagging of teachers. I have watched parents using legislation which was intended to provide help for those who needed it as a means of bludgeoning schools into allowing their totally disruptive children to make it difficult for everybody else to learn. And usually that's a lot of what I talk about. But there's another reason that this show is called Patriot Education. It is because we are all incipient patriots. And every single one of us needs to educate ourselves, our family, our friends, our children, our fellow Americans, into exactly what this nation means and why it is the greatest nation in the history of humankind. Not because of the incredibly lucky accident that we have a huge amount of natural resources, or the innate perfection of simply being born here that somehow or other endows you with sainthood, or the superiority of any state or region or religion or political party. Not for any of those reasons do I call this nation the greatest in the history of mankind. I believe that we are the greatest nation because we are not perfect. Because we, like our founders, understand that human beings aren't. That every one of us is innately flawed because we are not and can never become God. And that we understand that we will always have differences with one another. But so long as those differences do not include breaking my leg or picking my pocket, you go right ahead and enjoy them. And because we believe that every single living being has the God-given right to follow his or her own path, to union with the divine, to expansion of their soul in whatever way they choose, so long as it does no harm to another human being's life, liberty, or property. It is those ideas, those beliefs, whether we always achieve perfection in carrying them out or not, but the idea that we have them as guidelines that makes us a great nation, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes those very beliefs jump up and bite us in the gluteus maximus. Many nations scoff at our freedom of speech, where people can use obscenities and pejorative words about another ethnicity or nationality or religion, or talk about things that we consider, that some people consider appropriate only in behind closed doors in a bedroom, or speak out against government and say that we think the people we've elected are absolute idiots and we ought to get rid of them. They say that this kind of freedom just makes life chaotic, and that's why we have changeovers in government, and why, you know, gee, it'd be a lot nicer if we just had a king, then we'd know for 30 or 40 years how to deal with you people. Because we understand, ladies and gentlemen, the real underlying meaning of that famous statement, I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. And we grew up with that and live with that because of the men who gave birth to this nation and who put in our birth certificate the Declaration of Independence, the fundamental beliefs that I've expressed all of my life and that I read aloud to you at the beginning of this program. It is my belief that every year when the 4th of July rolls around again, every single American should take time to either read or listen to the Declaration of Independence. And if they can, if they have the imagination and the ability to step out of the usual round of worries over this, that, and the other thing, to put themselves in the place of these men who signed this document and imagine what they faced. The men who signed the Declaration of Independence, ladies and gentlemen, from Connecticut, Samuel Huntington, Roger Sherman, William Williams, Oliver Wolcott. From Delaware, Thomas McKeon, George Reed, Caesar Rodney. From Georgia, Button Gwinnett, Lyman Hall, George Walton. Maryland, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, Samuel Chase, William Parker, Thomas Stone. From Massachusetts, John Adams, Samuel Adams, Elbridge Gerry, John Hancock, Robert Treat Paine. From New Hampshire, Josiah Bartlett, Matthew Thornton, William Whipple. From New Jersey, Abraham Clark, John Hart, Francis Hopkinson, Richard Stockton, John Witherspoon. From New York, William Floyd, Francis Lewis, Philip Livingston, Lewis Morris. From North Carolina, Joseph Hughes, William Hooper, John Penn. From Pennsylvania, George Clymer, Benjamin Franklin, Robert Morris, John Morton, George Ross, Benjamin Rush, James Smith, George Taylor, and James Wilson. From Rhode Island, William Ellery, Stephen Hopkins. From South Carolina, Thomas Hayward Jr., Thomas Lynch Jr., Arthur Middleton, Edward Rutledge. From Virginia, Carter Braxton, Benjamin Harrison, Thomas Jefferson, Francis Lightfoot Lee, Richard Henry Lee, Thomas Nelson Jr., and George Witt. These men, ladies and gentlemen, understood, as many people in this nation who have become complacent and comfortable with the freedom and safety they enjoy do not understand, that liberty and justice for all is worth fighting and dying for. It is worth pledging one's life, fortune, and sacred honor to achieve. These men, every single one of them who signed that paper, knew that their signature was grounds enough for them to be hanged. And if it was found that they had committed treason, not just hanged, but drawn and quartered. And if you've ever read up on or know exactly what that means, since this is a family show and I really don't want to go into horrors, you'll understand. Because the drawing came before the hanging and the quartering came afterwards. They knew that their lives were literally on their line. How many of our elected officials in our state legislatures and our Congress would sign a law if they knew they could quite easily walk out the door afterwards and somebody would arrest them, haul them off to prison, and summarily hang them after a trial in which no jury was allowed to sit? Uh-huh. And this document was published, ladies and gentlemen. It wasn't a secret manifesto that was hidden back in a corner somewhere. It was printed and distributed all over the colonies. They put their names out there. They put their lives and their fortunes and their sacred honor literally out there as targets. They were enemies of the crown. They defied their quote-unquote lawful king. They were committing treason. Many of them had family or business interests or friends in England. Franklin did. His illegitimate son was the royal governor of New Jersey. Granted, their relationship was never all that good, but it got progressively worse after his son was arrested and shoved into jail when the New Jersey basically kicked out the royal governor and decided to rule itself. But even though he and his son didn't get along, that was his son, his blood. He had made, when Franklin was in Great Britain, trying to intercede with Parliament and get the king to pay attention to keeping the promises made to the American colonists, he made many friends there. So did Sam Adams. So did a lot of the other great men of the revolutionary times. They didn't just decide to get pissed off and, gee, wouldn't it be fun to have a revolution? It's been pretty boring around here. No, they did their damnedest, ladies and gentlemen, to try to remain loyal to their king. And that's not something that we in the America of today truly can understand. The belief expressed in the Declaration of Independence in the second paragraph, this that I'm going to read right now. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. This was the most radical, insane, crazy idea to many of the colonists themselves. They had grown up believing, because they were taught from the cradle, that the king had his right to govern you from God himself. the divine right of kings, was the underpinning of most of the European monarchies. God chose this family, this dynasty, this person to rule over you. And now these men are saying, wait a minute, God gave you the right to kick out whatever government is on top of you if it isn't preserving the rights God gave you. You have rights that come from God. I do? No, the king got all that. He's the one who doles them out to us. No. You got those rights from God. Being born with a human mind and a human heart and a human soul. Other humans don't give you those rights. Other humans merely share those rights with you, as you share with them. We cannot be God, ladies and gentlemen. No matter how hard progressives and Marxists and socialists try to convince us that we can and should be. Our founding fathers were smart enough to know that human beings have the right to govern themselves. But they also have to figure out where that right came from in order to do it properly. The founding fathers understood that you can't get there from here if you ignore the fact that there's something greater in the universe than you are. That basic, fundamental, last-ditch humility is what gave us the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. Because both of those documents do not state, neither one of them states, that we are automatically going to do everything right. And we don't need laws of any kind because we are inherently able to make the right decision all the time. And everybody else is too. And there's never going to be any conflict between us. And everybody is going to put honor and justice and truth before his or her own interests. They weren't stupid, ladies and gentlemen. They weren't that dumb. They understood that because we were created as individuals with individual talents, skills, personalities, spiritual perceptions, life experiences, that we were going to be individually responsible for making our own choices, and we wouldn't always choose correctly. They understood that power is an aphrodisiac and it is addictive. They understood that if you give unlimited power to anyone, you endanger yourself. Because anyone other than God will somehow or other, at one point or another, abuse that power. Every leader in the history of mankind has at one time or another abused power. About the only one I can think of who very, very rarely did was George Washington. But that was mostly because he really didn't want the power in the first place. Every other leader we've ever had here in this nation and in others has wanted power. Some have wanted it less than others and in consequence have been better leaders. Be afraid of the man or woman who seeks power for its own sake, ladies and gentlemen. Be very afraid. Be very afraid. Because he or she who seeks power has to be a remarkable person in order to know when not to use it. It takes effort and character and integrity to do what is right instead of what is easy. And oftentimes, when you give someone power, easy becomes broader and more seductive. And it doesn't matter how altruistic or compassionate or kind or high-minded or whatever the words of that power-seeking person are. You have to look at what they do with that power. I was having a discussion with a friend today, this afternoon, about the fact that every single one of us comes equipped with a certain batch of talents, skills, flaws, personality traits, so on and so forth. And what we do with those is always our choice, once we get to be an adult at any rate. Once we understand that we can make choices. Once we attain our independence. And there is no guarantee that we will always make the right choice. But if we're lucky and if we've grown up with some kind of moral compass or framework of ethics and values, we will try to make the right choice. And if we make a wrong one, we will do everything we can to repair any damage or harm that wrong choice has caused to those with whom we share this universe. And as I said earlier tonight, that is one of the things that this nation has done. Sometimes we've been heavy-handed. Sometimes we've been kind of pushy in the way that we try to convince people that their way of life needs to have some positive changes. And in a sense, you could put that up to arrogance, and often it seems like it, to people who are comfortable with things the way they are because they have a degree of power under a certain system, and if it changes, they won't have it anymore. I mean, I do all right, so why should we change everything? Is the usual reason why someone thinks that, hey, wait a minute, I've got a better idea, is pushing them around. Change is never easy, but change is part of being alive. It's part of that life is risk thing. Americans understand change probably better than any other nation in the world because we've been through so many of them. Our very government changes over. Yeah, about the only time it didn't very quickly was during Franklin Delano Roosevelt's time as president. And it was after he died that Congress got together and put in the amendment that said you can't serve more than two consecutive terms. So change is part and parcel. That's why as a political slogan, it was a little bit lame. I mean, we live in change. We are change. One of the reasons why, as far as I was concerned, anybody who decided that that was sufficient as a campaign chant was missing an important part of their brain or was up to no good, or possibly both. And as we have found out, I'll leave it up to you to decide whether it was one, the other, or both. But on the birthday of our nation, the two aspects of this program, the educational aspect in the public schools and my expertise in that area, and the educating oneself aspect, which I do on a daily basis, come together. They come together in celebrating this nation of ours, in understanding that our birth certificate lays out in front of the world the fundamental values of our culture. And that we have been, as a nation, true to those values in our flawed human way for over 200 years. And with firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we should every day pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to remain true to those values. To remind ourselves that we may not always agree with one another in the way a problem should be solved or dealt with, but that we can always talk with one another and try to find a way to get it dealt with or solved that benefits as many of us as possible and harms few or none. We can educate ourselves, ladies and gentlemen, as those men who wrote that and signed it did. Many of them were self-educated. Benjamin Franklin, for one. He did not have the benefit of Harvard, as John Adams did, or William and Mary, as Jefferson did. He taught himself. And many others, Roger Sherman was another one who was self-taught. Many of the men who crafted our Constitution were self-taught. Many of the men who signed the Declaration of Independence were self-taught. But they all, every single one of those men, had one thing in common. Every one of them was a lifelong learner. Every one of them desired to educate himself. Every one of them had a mind open to new ideas, new thoughts, new ways of doing things. Every one of them believed in the possibility of this land and its people. And every one of those men understood that there are things that are worth fighting and dying for. And if they've left us nothing but that very last thing, that freedom is worth fighting and dying for, and we can imbue our children through educating them at home, in public school, in private school, in church, in public assembly, in the halls of government. If our children see that we truly believe freedom is worth fighting and dying for, then we will have given them the ongoing legacy that those brave men left us. But if we do not open our ears, open our eyes, and open our mouths to what is right and true and needful to keep this nation great and strong, we will lose this magnificent property that they have bequeathed to us. And I don't just mean the dirt upon which your house is built, or the river on which you fish, or the road on which you drive your SUV, or the mountain you climb on vacation. I mean the property of a nation that believes in freedom and opportunity and equal justice for all under the law. You can keep that legacy alive for your children and their children and their children's children on into the future. And I ask you, please, do not lose hope that you can do it. Put yourself in the clothes of Roger Sherman, or Thomas Jefferson, or George Washington, or the Marquis de Lafayette. Put yourself in their shoes. And know how horrible things looked. How dismal the future appeared with this huge, gigantic army and navy of invaders taking more and more and more from you. And yet not giving up because something was worth fighting and dying for. If you can summon in yourself one teeny tiny spark of that kind of courage, that kind of optimism in the face of huge fear, You are a worthy inheritor of their legacy. And if you can light that spark in your children, you too are an American hero. I believe in American heroes, ladies and gentlemen. I believe American heroes are born every single minute. American heroes live next door to you, drive the garbage truck, work in the hardware store, teach your children, protect you in the uniform of policemen and firemen and state troopers. Go to your state legislatures and vote for laws. Go to Congress and try to do what you elected them to do. American heroes are everywhere, ladies and gentlemen, because this nation breeds heroes. This nation makes heroism the norm. Remember that. Celebrate it, not only on July 4th, but every single day that you live in this great nation. Celebrate it with humility and with joy. Celebrate it in what you do and what you say, in how you treat your fellow man and woman, how you deal with your universe, how you keep your word, how you show compassion to those who need it and accept compassion from those who would give it to you. You are the nation, ladies and gentlemen. You have a huge, huge responsibility. But you also have the greatest gift that God could ever bestow. You have freedom of choice. And if that isn't a reason to celebrate, ladies and gentlemen, and to light fireworks and hold sparklers and make red, white, and blue cakes and barbecue and get together and broach a keg and laugh and sing and watch parades and put the flag out in your front lawn, I don't know of any other reason there would be. You're celebrating yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, and your children and your children's children. You are celebrating today the birth of something that changed the world in more ways than we can yet foresee. And with luck and your devotion and your heroism, we'll continue to change it in the kind of direction that makes tomorrow better than yesterday. Please join us, ladies and gentlemen, on our website, www.patriotfamilies.com. You'll find there lots of other American heroes who believe, just as I do, that all of us have inherited that kind of spark of hope and optimism. That all of us can be the next George Washington, or Thomas Jefferson, or Sam Adams, or Gouverneur Morris, or anybody we want to be. We can take responsibility for ourselves and for our nation. My friend says what we should do is what we do today for our freedom. What we do now, ladies and gentlemen, is up to us because, God be thanked, we live in a free country. We live in a society that says you are not condemned or praised based on who your parents were, what place you were born in, what you look like, what your race is. You are an individual and you have the right to fly as high as your wings will take you. And good luck in the journey. Next week will be a hiatus week. I will not be broadcasting at my usual time. I will be visiting with the rest of the Patriot Family crew in the wonderful state of Indiana. It is our family reunion, and I am looking forward so much to seeing all my good friends that I've met with before in face-to-face and many that I haven't had the chance to. But following that, the week after that, which will be the 18th, I will be right back here, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Blog Talk Radio for Patriot Education. Between now and then, ladies and gentlemen, let the fireworks and the pomp and the parade remain in your heart to give you that warm glow that you as a true American hero deserve. You keep that with you. You keep that with you. Because nothing in this world can take away from you what you put in your heart and your mind, ladies and gentlemen. That is yours forever. And you have the incredibly wonderful gift of choosing what you do with it. You are the nation, ladies and gentlemen. You are American heroes. Don't forget, please, to join us here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll have a list of our shows coming up very shortly as we close out the program. I want to say thank you to my friends Tom and Yo, who have joined me in the chat room tonight. And thank you for your comments, folks. And I was so glad both of you were here. And I hope to see everybody back here on Thursday, July the 18th, for the next episode of Patriot Education. Next week, on July 11th, I will be heading to Indiana. And I am hoping that I will see many of you whom I've talked with and chatted with and interacted with online, in person and face-to-face when I get there. Meanwhile, visit our website, www.patriotfamilies, that's patriotfamilys.com, to read and talk and interact with people who, like you, are American heroes, who, like you, believe in this nation and its future, and will cheerfully pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to maintain the legacy of the great men who signed the document I read tonight. Don't ever forget, ladies and gentlemen, that you are the wealthiest people in the world, not only in material things, but in the one perfect, magnificent gift of freedom. As ever, all my love to my greatest fan. God bless you, folks. I'll see you in 2 weeks, and meanwhile, have a wonderful 4th of July evening. Enjoy the fireworks, salute the flag, and repeat the Pledge of Allegiance in honor of the birth of the greatest nation in the history of man. Good night.
Blog Talk Radio and Patriot Family is where you need to be if you want to be informed and inspired 5 days a week. On Monday at 7:30 p.m., you can listen to the Constitution Hour. On Tuesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday at 6 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Education, and on Friday at 7 p.m. you can listen to Exposed But Never Forgotten. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Hope to see you there.